Rabbi Elsa was mentioned earlier on, the part of this Tuesday Shmooze in general will be about trying to grow and develop. Certainly, in honor, we know that Caleb is not well. We're certainly missing him very much right now. And we're experiencing right now the year in Israel, to be able to be here together and to learn, and we should really do the best we can to take the most advantage of it. When I was in Florida, my very close friend, Ephraim Goldberg, he told me a very interesting story he had seen years ago in the Wall Street Journal. I'll read to you what he sent me. Just a very cute story. It'll be the introduction to this discussion we're having right now about the year in Israel. A wealthy businessman was once hosting a dinner party when he gave his guests a tour of his incredible estate. He took them around his extraordinary home and showed them all of his pools. One of them was filled with snakes, scorpions, and piranhas. Jokingly, he challenged his guests, whoever jumps in, swims across the pool, and makes it to the other side, can have whatever they like from my estate. As the guests turned to continue their tour, they heard a splash. When they looked, they saw one of the men swimming ferociously, as hard as he could, avoiding the lethal animals on his way to the other side. When he emerged from the pool, the stunned owner looked at him and said, "I cannot believe you just did that, but I must honor my word. What is it you want?" The man, dripping wet, out of breath, said, "I want one thing. I want to know who pushed me in." That's the story. It's in the Wall Street Journal, actually, about 15 years ago. He saw it there originally. Certainly, every person, no one ever take even a thought to jump into a pool like that. It's ridiculous. It's no way you could possibly cross the pool to the other side, until by accident you're stuck in it. And you have to paddle as fast as you can, swim as fast as you can, and you might surprise yourself. A lot more than you think you can do, in the end you get done. So what's stopping us? How come right now, again, Baruch Hashem, many of us are thriving, are working very hard, are growing a lot. Others are struggling to do so. What is stopping us from jumping in the pool and trying our hardest to grow and to develop? So I'll tell you a few ideas, I think of maybe two or three ideas, what in general is stopping us, and maybe how do we attack and address those concerns. Number one is we don't care. We don't care. I have no dreams or visions at all to excel in any area. So I'll share with you this is Parsha. There's I'm a father of two sets of twins. I'm sure some of you guys actually are twins here in this room. I'm a father of two sets of twins. So when I look at the Parsha, I'm very disturbed and bothered by the very beginning of Parsha's told us. Very disturbed and bothered. Because we have this special, special woman, one of the most, Rivka. She's having a very terribly painful and difficult pregnancy. And she wants to figure out what in the world is happening in my body. But Torah Imkei Lamaze Anochi, why am I even having this experience right now? She walked by the Beis Medrash and she'd feel a kick and a pull. She walked by the base of Avodah Zarah and she'd feel a kick and a pull. And she says, Imkei, what am I doing here? Lamaze Anochi. She was very bothered. So sure enough, the response that she gets, she wants to go seek out counsel, seek out insight, what exactly it is that is happening in her stomach. And she's told the following, what to me seems to be the worst news a parent of twins could ever experience. She's told that you have two kids, it's not one kid, you have two kids, and they're going to hate each other. One each other's throats all the time. They'll never get along. When one's up, the other one's down. Again, as a father of twins, you could not hear worse news than this. That people who share the same womb won't be able to be in the same room together later on. It's terrible. I didn't mean that as a rhyme. It wasn't intended. I see you appreciated that. It wasn't intended. You could, and yet, what's her reaction? Baruch Hashem. How could a parent react that way when hearing this news? So I'll tell you what the other option was that she thought it might have been. She thought she was going to have one kid. And this one kid just wouldn't care. Beis Medrash? That's nice. I'll go to that. Avodah Zarah? I'll go to that. Everything's cool. I'm chill. I appreciate everything, whatever you got to offer me. It's nice. This is nice. That's nice. I have zero passion. No passion. This is fine. That's fine. That means you will never amount because you don't care enough to squeeze out of yourself something. If you're in a battle and you're playing a game, you don't care if you win or not. Then you won't win. Trying to figure out a shot in a Rashi, you don't care if you get it or not, then you'll never get it. If you don't have goals and visions and dreams to accomplish, then you will never accomplish. Rivka was so much happier to hear she'd have two enemies of children who both had passion. The other option was terrible. She'd rather not even have a kid who couldn't care less. But yet in this room, there are people who just don't care. That's fine. That's fine. You can go here. You can go there. Whatever makes you happy. Rabbi Yonah, I was with my student, with my shir just 2 days ago. Rabbi Yonah brings down in the first paragraph of the 10th Mishnah. He says, a person should love work. A person should like work, should love work. Why should you love work? He says, because if you're not working, what are you doing inside? You're relaxing. I'm sure you guys have experienced this in your life. I certainly have when I was younger as well. You get relaxing, gets very boring. When you're sitting in bed all day long, just relaxing. And if you haven't experienced that yet, then you're fooling yourself. To sit in bed all day long, you get like a headache. You get restless from resting so much. Rabbi Yonah himself says that. At some point in time, rest is great when rest is there to relieve an experience of intensity, an experience of effort. But when you're just sitting down all day long, when you're stuck in a rut and you're sitting down, you do not feel good about yourself. Even the rest that you have in your bed is no longer restful. You feel restless while you're resting at that point in time. To relax is what you do when your passion runs out. You need like a little break. But instead, what we do is what's called killing time. I was talking to him just this morning, talking to somebody, and I walk over to them, they were on their phone in the Beis Medrash. I know it's a crime, it should be a crime, I know it is. But worse than being on the phone in the Beis Medrash is they were playing that game, you know the game I'm talking about, where you maneuver with your finger so that shot, that all the balls fly out, and maybe you break the record, the high score. Dare to dream, right? I don't know. I don't know what it's called either. It doesn't really matter anymore. It doesn't really matter. What for what? What's the goal? So I get a high score? Psst, call it kavod. You can share high score stories with your friends. You got a higher score. Wow. Unbelievable. You know what that's called? That's called killing time. Instead of doing that, you know what you should have said? Open your wallet, take a $20 bill, and just burn it and light it on fire. Because that's also just wasting your currency. You have currency. It's called hours of your life. Waste it if you want it. It's no problem. Take out your wallet, take out your favorite clothes, throw into a fire, and just waste your time away. Waste your life away.
Time is money.
Time is money. Really, Rabbi, really, money is time. Money is time. Club is time. You think money means that you spend time engaged, investing in order to make money, but really money is just a representative of your time. If you cared about yourself enough, that you want to be productive in life, that a second that goes by, that you waste, you look back and you feel, what happened to my time? You feel terrible about that. You know, the Chafetz Chaim, we're told. Story goes, before one year, before it was Yom Kippur, before it was Yom Kippur time, Yom Nerayim, he was locked in his room and he wasn't coming out in time. His kids were getting worried. His kids were getting worried. What's going on here, Rebbe? It's time for us to start davening soon. Where are you? Should be ready for your Yontif. They walk in, they see him like paper and scratching and writing and scratching and writing. What are you doing, Rebbe? He said, there's 18 minutes in my year I can't place what I did with them. 18 minutes in my year that I can't place. Can we even place 18 minutes of our year? It's crazy thought. Someone who cares so much about his time, that he values his life, it's his currency, it's his time. You want to go like this. And not only that, you just watch. Watch how the ball's going. And they stop going, and then you push it again. And the clock is ticking down. By the way, that clock ticking down, the timer, that's really just your life. It's just clicking down while you're waiting and watching it. For what? For the high score. So when your phone breaks, and then your high score is off, you just got to start the whole thing all over again. This is what we spend our time doing. This is what we want to be one day, so proud of our year experience in Israel, is that we set high scores. Killing time. But you might say to yourself, you know what? I'm okay with that. It's fine. Kill time. I'm okay with being average, being mediocre. So I would hope in your life, you'll never ever say that sentence about anything in life. I'm okay with being a mediocre lawyer, a mediocre husband, mediocre father. Mediocre's fine. I mean, when I was younger, I got a C in my classes, in a few of my classes. Okay, it's true. In a few of my classes, I got a C. My parents came home. Avi, what's with your report card? C's? I said, Dad, C is average. Right? C is average. I'm average. He punished me afterwards. And after I got out of my room and I was grounded, so I realized, most people don't get C's. It's not really average. The average score is not a C. But we'll tell ourselves, let's even say it was a C. You aim for mediocrity? Imagine on a date with a girl. So what are your aspirations in life? I want to be mediocre. Hopefully I'll be a mediocre husband if we want to marry one day. I'll be a pretty mediocre father to our children if we have them one day. And I hope to even be a mediocre professional. No? What do you say? Working out with us? Nowhere in life is mediocrity accepted by anybody. But religiously, I'm okay with where I am right now. I don't need to go for greater heights. I don't want to connect more. Something's wrong with our religious brain if we can say that statement and tolerate ourselves in the morning afterwards. Level number two we have. Besides, we don't care about things. Our priorities are out of whack. We've lost ourselves. Some point in the process of history, we've lost ourselves. Not us, the people in the world. I'll give you an example. You know, age versus youth. So besides the ideas that we have, we're usually looking to be younger, not older. For some reason, you know, as people get more advanced in life, they get older, they were wishing they were younger. They want to have surgeries, look younger. People get older, you get more marginalized, you're not important anymore. The first time age ever happened was last week's parsha. Age was created last week. It says Avraham Zakein Babayamim. Avraham was the first person ever to be called a Zakein. You know why? Because he asked to get older. He asked to look older. We're going to see the Gemara Bracha. Some of you may have seen it already. Daf Yud Beis Mabez in the Mishnah. It references that we say it every year in the Haggadah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Ariadne, Kiben Shivim Shana. The Gemara Daf Chavches and Bracha is going to describe that he wanted to get older looking. Why? Because back in the day, age was respect. You know what it means when you're older? It means you're more experienced in life. You have more wisdom. You know what it means for us when you're older? It means you're one step out the door already. You can't relate to us anymore. You know why we look at youth instead of age as being a priority for us? Because youth is all about potential. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to have ever succeeded in life. But there's hope for me. So you know what? That sounds like a good plan. I can be respected and be the prime of my life and have no success up until now. Fantastic. Love youth. It's all about what might be. And I'm not there yet, so it's okay. You know what age is? I sat down yesterday in Rabbi Elmay's office, actually. Thank you for letting me appreciate that. With a set of grandparents looking for grandchildren for next year in yeshiva. The father says to me, I was born in Budapest. I'm like, Budapest? And then after the war, I'm like, war? Like, he is life. His life experiences. I'll never forget my grandparents. Don't forget them, first of all. And I'll never forget the fact when I never appreciated them until I was in Israel for the year. They had an apartment. They were just older people. They were my parents' parents. Like, you know, they were slower than I was. There wasn't much to discuss with them until I had opportunities to talk to them. My grandfather fought in World War II. He landed in Normandy on D-Day. Could you imagine having someone in your family like that? And until you're 18, you don't appreciate what that even means. You know why? Because the older you are, the less important. We don't care about you at all. You're a has-been. We were trained that way by athletics. 35 years old, over the hill. Actors, actresses. 40, then you have the role of a grandmother, which is a minor role in the movie we're going to play right now. For us, age is not about experience and life values. Because that would mean that you'd have to spend your life well and productive to earn that. I'd rather like youth. Requires no effort on my part at all. Just existing makes you younger. Makes you youth. And makes you be able to have potential ahead of you. That's all I want. Potential's good. Because we don't care. We don't have to do anything to earn youth. When it comes to age, you have to earn it. Our priorities are so out of whack. Avraham Avinu would want to get older. I want to look younger. Those Ben Azariah would pray to be more esteem-looking. What happened to Botox and a facelift? He just blew that. When I was younger, there was a commercial. Andre Agassi was a famous tennis player. It was a commercial he did for Nikon, I think it was called, cameras. And the slogan was, image isn't everything, it's the only thing. I'm not sure if that makes any sense, but that was a slogan. I think that was a slogan. Image. It's all about image. The goal of life was to present in a certain way, whether it was shallow or really mattered. All presentation based. And it makes so much sense. Why? Because it's so easy to present. It requires no depth. It requires no investment. God created you. You just come as you are with nicer clothes on. Maybe you brush your hair a little more. Image. And I'm young, so I have a lot ahead of me. And that's what we value, is what's ahead of you. Because you haven't failed yet. If you value age, that means you're judged for what you've done. That means that your actions actually will matter in the end. And you're responsible for what you do in life. Who wants that? That's what it was back in the day. That's old school. Now, just, we're here. It's all that really matters right now. We're around. We're cool. We're chilled. This is the approach of Esav. This existed before we even came to the birth. We didn't create this idea. Esav, in this week's Parsha, when he's talking to Yaakov, says he was starving. He wanted so bad to have his lentil soup. He says, I'm going to die. Why do I need to have the birthright? The birthright doesn't mean anything to me at all. Rashi explains the birthright could be death. I might, if I err in my avoda, in the base of Mikdash, it was based on being the firstborn. That's where, at the time, there were the Kohanim, there were the priests for us, were the firstborn children. That might result in something negative for me. I don't need that. But there's also a lot of positives that could be, a lot of positives. Yeah, but you know what? There's negatives that come along with, I don't need that at all. The first person to show us priorities out of whack, we're not alone. We have a great grandfather to thank for that. We have a great great uncle, I should say. With Eastern Russia. Well, I'm the Bechorah. I don't need the Bechorah. What do I need it for? I'd rather not have the threat of expectations on my head. What if I mess up? You know, I'd rather not have that. You take that, Yaakov. I'll take chill. I'll take a relaxed life. I prefer that more. In what area of life that's important do you not know of challenges? You want to have just chill. You want to have no ramifications, expectations for your actions. Where in life would you ever want to choose that option? So we've discussed already a little bit about we don't care to excel. We discussed about priorities being off. And I'll say, let's even say we do care. Our priorities are spot on. There's one major problem we still have left. Is that we're overwhelmed. We're down on ourselves. We may not like ourselves too much. I'm not proud of myself. I don't think I can do so much anyways. I'm limited. That was also Esau's approach. I'm going to die anyways. I'm limited in fashion. What am I going to invest so much in this? Why invest so hard in something when I can just not invest? Either way, I'm going to die. That was Esau's approach. What am I investing so much time in? Am I really worth the investment? So I'll tell you, I had this moment of experience. I mentioned some of the guys already about 2 weeks ago. I had a real moment. I was flying to America, and I went to the airport, and they changed the flight on me a little bit. They switched me over to some Paris airline, and they had a refuel actually in Paris. It's very nice this time of year. I didn't get off the runway, but it looks very nice this time of year. And as we flew back from Paris, we crossed over some mountain range. And as we got higher and higher, it's not very silly, and I'm embarrassed for even saying it to you, but it's part of my thought process when I was seeing it happen. The mountain range was like tiny from up there. It was like nothing. It was small, so small. And I thought to myself, like, again, I apologize for this immature thought. The world is really, really big. And we're really a tiniest little part of it. Like, does it really matter what I do? Am I putting tefillin on today? Is going to really matter? Sitzis? God cares? It's a huge world! That feeling of, do I matter? Is what I do significant? Is a very heavy thought. And you might even have your priorities in order. And you might even have cares you wish you would matter. But how do you avoid the fact that it just doesn't look like it matters at all what I do? There's a line we say, and actually Avram said it 2 weeks ago. I mean, he said it a long time ago, but 2 weeks ago the parsha, we read about it. He said, Anochi afar ve'efer. I'm dirt, I'm dust, I'm nothing. And in some ways it's true. And when you think about that a little bit, so then, you know what, who cares? So a piece of dust, put its fill on today. So a piece of dirt, learn a little Gemara today. Does it really matter? But there's a corresponding Gemara to that one. It's Mishnah Sanhedrin. So the following thing, it says, and if you ever go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and I think also probably most Holocaust Museums have this quote as well, anyone who makes a person be lost, who kills a person in Israel, mala because of the Torah considers the kilu ibed olam male. It means you destroyed an entire world. If you cause to exist, to last, one nefesh of Israel, mala because of the kilu kiim olam male. You saved an entire world. You kept the entire world going. It's not only someone else, that's you also. You're also a world. If you are, it doesn't say you're a goof. If you let your nefesh go away, you let it go, you let it slide, you chill, you set your high score, lost it. Lost the world. Lost the world. And if you got it, if you were kind, if you fulfilled it, if you lasted, if you were able to stand up to the great challenge of life, and you pulled it off, you're Mekayim an entire world. He says in the end, and that's why we say, you're obligated to say about yourself, Bishvili Nivra'ol. The world was created just for me. What do you mean? Anochi Afar V'Efer. Aren't I very low? Maybe you are. The world was created just for your speck of dirt. It was created for you. If you honestly felt that, then the mountain ranges could be so, so big. But they were made just for you. For every single person in this room, in the world is here just for you. That's your attitude in life. It's not an arrogant attitude. That's a recognition that God created you, which means that He believes that you are important. Whether you think that you are or not, you are. It's called having kavod for yourself. Talk about kibud avim, kavod of shamayim, kavod of your abundim, but we always forget to have personal kavod. Kavod for yourself. You know why? Because the root of the word kavod is the word kaved. Kaved means heavy. To treat yourself with respect is a heavy thing. Because you know why? Because it means you have to act that way. It means that you're required to do something with yourself. Because there was no kavod there at all. Do whatever you want. Waste your time. Be an animal. Play your games. Do nothing. Don't care to connect. But the moment that you look at yourself with kavod, that's a very heavy thing to do. Because it means that now what you do actually will matter. That your success will make your world exist. And your failure to do so would be tragic. So despite all the, you don't care to excel, your priorities are off, you're overwhelmed, in reality, you're very, very significant. You wouldn't be here otherwise. I started with a story, and the idea was that you can do much more than you think you can. That's part of the goal of the year. That you have potential beyond your imagination. You would never jump into the pool, but once you're in there already, you start to pack, again, to do the crawl very quickly, you realize that you're much better than you thought you were. It's a Gemara in Brachos. We did it yesterday with my share, that for Yudam and Aleph. It compares God to your neshama. Just like Kadosh Baruch Hu is Tahora, so too your neshama is Tahora. You were given a gift no matter how much you put it in the mud. No matter what you've done or what you've seen, you just wash it off. It's tahora. It compares it to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You're sitting on a gold mine. Whether you like it or not, it might sound very heavy. That's called personal kavod. You exist. That means that God thinks you're fantastic. You have fantastic kavod of yourself. You're sitting with neshama that is the most kadosh thing in the entire world, compared in the Gemara to Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. You may not pick up on that, but it's true. And I'll just tell you, you want to say you're more like I said back in the day, you're an average person. There's one person we're told in the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Lamed Aleph Mabez, who was born average. One person we're told of. He's described as being average. His mother actually davened that she should have him as a child, and she prayed that he should be a Zera Anashim. The Gemara in Brachos says it means that he should be completely fit in. He should be swallowed. This is Muvla Ben Ashim. He should be swallowed up among other people who are. He shouldn't stand out at all. The most average, non-normal person in the world. You know what that person became in the end? Shabbat is impounded. They know who it was in the end. Shmuel HaNavi was created as the most average person you could imagine. Zera Anashim, Muvla Ben Anashim. So maybe you're also average. So maybe you'll be a prophet too. If not a prophet, certainly great. Average is not an excuse at all. It's just, you know, we have a model to follow now. We have Shmuel HaNavi, who also was created average. You don't have to be the biggest genius in the world to be fantastic. You don't have to be the greatest, you know, athlete, have the most fun personality to be fantastic. You have to realize that you have kavod. That's a heavy thought, kavod. It's so heavy to realize that. But it means I can't sit and waste my time anymore. I can't make excuses. Oh, you know what? I had sniffles. I couldn't make it to that. I had sniffles. Really? That's an excuse as to why you gave up a day of your life, why you watched 3 movies, and you stayed up and then because you had sniffles. That's the excuse of someone who doesn't think you're important. But you think that you're important, and that every single moment is going to matter a lot. It's not an excuse anymore. To say, well, I'm taking a break from learning right now. My chavrusa went out for a minute. The Rebbe's discussing something else, so I'll just go back to my phone and do that thing. Just that. And then watch it as it just bounces. Take a different sefer out. Take a Tanakh out. Learn a little Tanakh. Go through Parsha a little bit. There's a lot more things you can do with your time if you're stuck on a Gemara and your Rebbe's not here yet. It's someone who does not believe in themselves. Their lives matter would play the game. The mashal I'll give you is, imagine you have a car. Some famous mashal people give all very often. You have a stick shift car and you're driving, chilling on the highway, got your arm under the seat. No one's there, but you got the arm under the seat anyways. Right? Going 30 miles an hour. Honk, honk, right? Hey guys, how we doing? Right? Second gear. It's great gear. And after driving that way a little while, I'm like, you know, you have 5 gears in your car. You know that? I'm like, it's okay. I like 30 miles an hour. Gets me places. Yeah, because places 30 miles an hour gets you places. You can go 75, 80 miles an hour. Not legally, but you can get that way. Fifth gear. Nah, prefer second gear. Who does that? Who would say such a ridiculous thing? The answer is, we do. I'm fine with how I am. Good. Things are good. No, I don't want to get that. I don't want to get like that. I should spend my time, every second of my time productively. Please, rather. Like, I need downtime. Just know, downtime is also productive because it leads you to have more uptime. No, Rabbi, I'm always thinking about God, whatever I do. Isn't that a little crazy? I'm happy thinking God 30% of my day. It's enough time for me to think about God. 30 miles an hour. It's good. Things are good. Pretend you're locked in a cell, in a prison. You have to find a sharp object because you want to dig yourself out like an Alcatraz. And you find one. You lift something off of the guard and you find it and you say, you're digging in the back of your wall. Like in Shawshank Redemption, you saw the movie before. You're digging, you're making a hole there. And it takes you years and years, and you're stocking the dirt in your pants, and you're letting him out in the courtyard, you follow the movie, and you finally break out. Only realize that you dug with the key to your cell room. You could just open the door if you wanted to. What are you digging for? If you would think for a second of what you have with you. So it's very nice. You got out. It took you 10 years. You just had to put the key in the lock and just turn it. And then it opens up for you itself. What are you sitting thinking? Well, who knows what's going to happen? I don't know if I'll like this. Maybe I don't want this in the end. Well, you know what? Let's just try it out. Try. Go. Daven. Beg God to give you some connection which you may not feel right now. Maybe He'll grant it to you. Maybe He won't. You don't have to do that. I'll try learning then. Maybe learning through that connection through God. But you're holding right now a key in your hands that is so valuable, but for some reason we insist on making it so much harder for ourselves. The goal that the Rebbeim have for you, it's a very simple goal. It's that we want you to be the happiest, have the happiest life. Most meaningful. I don't want you having midlife crises when you're 50 years old. Oh, you know what? My gosh, like I'm well-to-do, Baruch Hashem, nice family, but I'm spiritually a little bit void. Let me buy a motorcycle. That'll solve the problem. You don't have to have midlife crises. There's nothing to have crises about. If your midlife is engaged and you feel God in your life, there's no crisis to happen. Why do we go? I'm sorry for this rant right now. Why do we go to sporting events at the stadium? It's much clearer when you're at home on your couch with your friends, with your parents. Watch the game there. It's easier to see it. The replays, the announcers. I'm instead of at a game trying to crane my neck to get an angle in to see part of the why. So the answer is very simple. If you've ever been in a stadium when your team hit that game-winning shot, you go to that next year, you give them the biggest hug you've ever met before in your life, never see him again, ever again. But can't believe it! You hug the guy next to you, 7-5. Everyone's celebrating. What are you celebrating about? Because you just experienced like magic. You can't have that at home. Okay, stop your dad 5. It's nice. Your friend even, you know, take another drink from the fridge. But nothing happens at home. But when you're in the event, it's magic. So you have two choices right now. You're right now in a stadium. You can take a bathroom break, buy popcorn, talk on the phone, but you might miss that shot. And the rest of the place went electric. And you just like walked in and said, hey, what did I miss, guys? And it's over. You can't make it up anymore. Ethan actually asked me to tell something about it. I asked him, so what are you speaking about? I said, I'm not trying to figure out. So I said, tell me something about a wedding. So I'll tell you a quick thing about a wedding. I was, and this is the final point I want to raise with you. We went to the discussion of watching Moshe Hurd get married, those of us who went to it, 2 days ago, 2 nights ago. I had the same experience when I went to watch the Andrew Israeli get married about, you know, a number of weeks ago. I never noticed before, I don't know why, but I never really watched the chassan as the kallah is walking down the aisle. Never really noticed that. It's like, you know, kind of look around and see who else is there. And I just started watching the chassan's face. To watch the chassan, just like looking at his wife. He's probably thought for years, what's it going to be when I get married? Who's my wife going to be like? You know, you always wonder, where is she now? Maybe I thought that when I was younger. Maybe I was romantic. I'm sure some of you did also. You don't tell me right now, but I'm sure you did. I see some smiles in the room. I know you have. And this is the girl. Is it? She's about to walk down. And you're sitting and you're watching her. And you're just like, I can't, like, this is it. I'm about to get married. And you have that look on your face. Like, wow. It's unbelievable. There's something called sason, something called simcha. They sound like, they're not synonyms. There's no real words really. They're not the same thing as each other. One is a joy of what you've done. You can have appreciation of what you've accomplished in life. Look at yourself in the mirror. I've done a lot with my life. And that's a certain level of sason or simcha. But there's something else. It's what you're going to do. It's what's about to happen. You're watching your wife walk down the aisle and you just, my life is going to change forever in a moment. I'm going to have a family soon, hopefully. I want to raise kids. And you're smiling because you can't wait for the next stage of life to take place. I want you to watch the chasa the next time, if you're at a wedding, which should happen next time, which should happen Bekarov, the right time for every one of you. I want you to watch the chasam's face. Because he's watching his mate and realizing they're about to spend life together. When you got on the plane, you ended in Torah Chiraga. Kadosh Baruch Hu is your chasam. And he's sitting there and he's just beaming. Can't wait. I cannot wait. And he's just looking and waiting for you to walk down the aisle. That's all he wants. Just walk down. Learn with me. Study with me. Spend time with me. Can you imagine what happened when that chassan looks at his bride and she's checking her phone? Oh! A watch! High score! It's great. Kol kavod. Just ruined your wedding. And the cameras took a picture of their pictures the whole time. They saw it. You can't like hide under the dress, a big dress, where you're like, they see you doing that. You're right now walking down an aisle. I'll just give you one last charge. There was a student named Judah Cohen here a number of years ago. And he used to walk into the basement bedrooms with a shirt that said on it, Game 7 every day. Anyone who doesn't know, you know, Game 7 means that it's the last game of a series. And it's do or die, win or go home. Game 7 every day. What that means is that no matter what you do, this is it. This is going to be it right now. What you do right now is going to decide everything. If you have that attitude, then when you're walking down the aisle, you're going to be beaming just like Kadosh Baruch Hu is beaming. Same level of beaming. I want to give a pitch to the boys who are working on something for Caleb. What we do, what we're going to do for ourselves. Picture the following scene. Every single day, morning Seder, or afternoon Seder, or night Seder, all of them. From 20 minutes, we say, no matter what's going on right now, no phone. Which you never have fun anyways. No break. From 10:20 to 10:40, every single kid in the basement is learning something. The kol Torah that we will feel and have in mind, this is because of our foolish shalema. That experience that we will have by being a yeshiva, complete, working together, is something that will give such a simcha. Not only to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but to us. Part of something very special. I give you a bracha. You should be able to get over your feelings about yourself. Get your priorities in order. To understand what's awaiting you around the corner. The simcha you should have at what you're about to do if you do it well. We should merit to be able to together grow as yeshiva, grow individually, but to Hashem, be able to be in Gula Miramim.